couldn't find our local music because I'm way behind, so I'm using music we're not supposed to use.
All right.
So there you go. All right, this is Trending Now. Good morning. Welcome to Trending Now with Josh Arnold. I'm Rick Moore. Josh is here, of course, our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky. And anyway, what you got lined up?
Well, City Council President in Salem, Beth Gerard, is ill and will be joining us next week instead of this week. But Jen Holmgren, the City Councilor in Gloucester, Susan Curry, a social media consultant, and Kim Spanner, who's going to talk about the Polar Plunge, the 8th Annual Polar Plunge for Rotary District 7930. Just wrap up the show.
Okay, sounds good. We'll be right back with our first guest.
Meet for lunch, cocktails after work, or a romantic dinner for two. Whatever your plan to do it at Sylvan Street Grill in Peabody and Salisbury. See you at Sylvan Street.
Eat, drink, and chill at the Sylvan Street Grill.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. Our company has been proud to have supported high school sports on the North Shore for more than 30 years. Our student-athlete program recognizes championship performance in the classroom and on the field. Moynihan Lumber is also committed to championship performance when it comes to meeting all your building and home improvement needs. And if you're planning to change your kitchen, please visit our kitchen cabinet showrooms at any of our three locations. In Beverly, North Reading, or Plaistow, New Hampshire, or at moynihanlumber.com.
Stronger, faster, tougher. When you need the MVP of community banks, look no further than the Institution for Savings, with 14 full-service offices throughout the North Shore. We have MVP rates and an all-star team to serve you. Bank from the ball field with our 24/7 online application apps, internet banking, mobile deposit, and more. Institution for Savings, your winning team. Visit institutionforsavings.com, member FDIC, DIF, equal housing lender.
Ever wish that help with your business was as nearby as your next-door neighbor? At Cape Ann Savings Bank, we're the folks who have helped our neighbors build prosperous communities since 1846. And we invite you to give us a call, discuss your vision, and learn how we can help you grow your business. We're here for you. You have questions. We have answers. Just give us a call, 888-283-CASB, or visit capeannsavingsbank.com. Member FDIC, DIF, Equal Housing Lender.
Welcome back to Trending Now with Josh Arnold. Our first guest is Jen Holmgren, who is a city councilor at large in Gloucester. Jen, welcome to the program.
Hey, Josh. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, we usually start out with give us a 3 or 4 minute bio, and then we'll get into some questions. So tell us about you.
Sure. So thanks a lot. And I want to wish you the best of luck tomorrow at the Polar Plunge. I'm really excited for the Rotary Club and all it does in terms of service to the community and also in helping to eradicate polio worldwide. So thank you. I am a first-term counselor at large for the city of Gloucester. I'm a registered nurse. I work for the Home Health Foundation. I also am a wife and a mother. And our daughter is a 7-year-old at West Parish Elementary School in Gloucester. I'm very excited to serve the city as a counselor at large. I was sworn in a month ago yesterday. So it's all new and very exciting.
Great. Now, you've been on the council, as you say, a month. What have you been you've been attending city council meetings, I think, forever. I know that you, before you were elected, you were a frequent guest and visitor. How is it the same and how is it different?
Well, I'm really getting to understand the machinations of the city in terms of a community servant. As you say, I recently had the opportunity to attend the first day of the big yearly Mass Municipal Association conference, and So I got to sort of get a picture of what it's like to be on the other side and absorb the lingo and watch the interactions between people working for different municipalities around the state. It was very informative. I've gotten to attend workshops on recreational marijuana, both locally and at that particular conference, and I've been learning more about zoning, which are two issues very important to the city and to Massachusetts in general. Now that I'm a city councilor, I have the opportunity to really gain a better in-depth understanding of issues like that. I also just read that Governor Baker hopes to make it easier for communities like ours to zone in a way that would help close the housing gap and make it more affordable for people to live in Massachusetts, and that's an issue that's close to my heart. So we'll see what happens there, but if it works, it's exciting. So it's very interesting to watch how things work from the perspective of being a city councilor and a municipal employee in general. I've never had that opportunity before, so I'm very excited, learning a lot.
Great. Now, you've had some formal and informal ways to acclimate yourself or orientate yourself to the role of city councilor, as well as getting to know department heads, how the administration works, boards, committees, and commissions. Share with us, if you will, some of the methodologies or ways in which you this orientation has been working with you.
Sure, thank you. Yeah, well, I'm fortunate in that I've gotten to know many people already through having attended just shy of 90 meetings prior to being sworn in as a city councilor, and my understanding of how the city operates deepens with each passing day. I have attended many meetings of boards and commissions and committees in addition to city council meetings, and the mechanics by which they make recommendations to the council and the administration are something I'm gaining a broader understanding of as well. Fortunately, formally, we had a council workshop shortly after Inauguration Day in which we were able to collaborate with department heads on sort of the way things work in the city. I feel it was very productive, and I'm hoping we can have another one soon. Our city clerks and auditor's offices are resources I've been relying on pretty heavily as I learn more, and a common thread I've found, and that does not surprise me at all, is that our city employees are hard workers who are open to collaboration and wanting to get things right, and it gives me the confidence I need in getting my job done right, too.
City councilors are all assigned committees by the council president. Some in Gloucester, they're called standing committees. In Salem, they're subcommittees. What are the committee or committees do you serve on? And tell me about that process.
Oh, sure. Yeah, thank you. So I was named to be the vice chair of the City Council Planning and Development Standing Committee, and I serve on that committee with the chair, Ward 4 Councilor Val Gilman, and with our council president, Paul Lundberg, another councilor at large, and he is the third member of this committee. And planning and development deals with things like zoning, special permits, and other things like that. It's very interesting. There's a lot of reading involved and a lot of making sure that things go well, vetting and the whole process. And I'm also the council rep on the Animal Advisory Committee, which is brand new. It's almost a year old. And right now that particular committee is preparing for a coyote education forum presented by Dr. John Way of Eastern Coyote Research. He's got quite an excellent reputation in terms of that field, and I know that at this time of year, coyotes are in the middle of denning and giving birth to their puppies, so there's a bit more coyote activity than usual in the January-February months. And this particular forum is going to be at the Rocky Neck Cultural Center on February 26th at 7 p.m., and there's been quite a bit of interest surrounding that, so that's really nice. And as a committee, Animal Advisory has done outreach at Good Harbor Beach, and they're planning to be out there once again when the weather gets a little warmer.
Well, it's interesting because if you had a meeting about providing more books for the local library versus a meeting on coyotes, you'd fill the place with coyote on the meeting on coyotes.
I'm sorry, can you repeat that?
I said if you had two meetings, one was on whether or not to buy more books for the local library or a second one, a hearing on the issue of coyotes in the community. The second one would fill City Hall. The other one would be probably not as well attended.
It's pretty funny. I mean, there's such a huge amount of interest around coyotes at this time of year. And since last year, when that unfortunate incident happened where the dog was unfortunately killed by a coyote, there's been a lot more education on the part of the city. They had Mass Wildlife come and do a presentation, and then, you know, the Animal Advisory Committee was formed, and that was excellent. So we really were digging deep into this sort of thing.
Well, I was jokingly sharing with a former city councilor that growing up in East Gloucester, if you had a problem with coyotes, you simply trapped them and you put them in the car, you drove them down to Revere Street and let them out there, knowing that that would get back to Val Gilman. So anyway, we're moving along.
Oh, my goodness.
What are some of the issues that are in play now or you anticipate being in the pipeline for your Planning and Development Committee?
Well, without a doubt, the most important issues facing the P&D Standing Committee right now are the solar development and recreational marijuana zoning. In terms of recreational marijuana, with many thanks to the Board of Health Director Karen Carroll, to Ward 4 Councilor Gilman, and other members of the Marijuana Task Force, we are getting a good grasp of what may come down the pike once the Cannabis Control Commission finalizes regulations at the state level. And there are so many things happening with that issue on the state level and the municipal level. Sometimes it feels like we're sort of building the airplane as it's rolling down the runway, but we owe it to constituents to do our homework, and I'm happy to work with the administration and my colleagues to come up with a workable solution.
Well, it's funny, we were going to have Beth Gerard, who's the City Council President in Salem, on the show today.
Yes.
And she's not feeling well, so we'll have her on next week. But the marijuana issue is an issue that they're dealing with in Salem as well. And I put out the notion, well, is anyone doing anything like putting a panel together for so that Gloucester and Beverly and Danvers and Salem and all the communities north of Boston can kind of compare notes and share who's doing what and how they're approaching it and what they're running into. And she liked that idea, so maybe that's something that will be forthcoming.
That's a great idea, yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
Fuller School, I guess the concern the public has, I mean, there's a lot of different concerns regarding that, and one of them is that, you know, we have I-4C2, which has been a vacant lot since at least when I was a kid, maybe before I was born, but I think at least when I was a kid. You've got the Maplewood School, which is just not been able to do much with it for a good number of years, and I think people are wondering, is Fuller School the same thing? Going to follow that same track, or are we going to have a YMCA there, or is it going to spend another 5 or 10 years trying to figure out what to do there?
Well, I really hope the property doesn't stay vacant for another 10 years. With regard to the Maplewood School, that project seems to be finally moving forward. I can't remember off the top of my head where it is in the stages of development, but there seems to be some enthusiasm, and the property will be developed, so that's nice. And on the Fuller issue, there are lots of moving parts, as you know, and a lot of issues to be ironed out. The administration, the developer, the city council, and the planning board are all working on a plan with the Fuller Mixed Use Ventures LLC. My general feeling is that this has been a long process, and we need to take the time to vet all the potential scenarios and get it right for the most good of all concerned. But I am very concerned about the vandals who have smashed the windows out of the building, and just in terms of it being a drain on the taxpayers' money, I would really like to see something happen with it sooner than later.
Good. Okay. There were people who were parking in school lots during a storm a couple of weeks ago, and mm-hmm. part of that came as a result of a snow emergency notice saying, hey, you got to get your car off the street. You're welcome to put it in school parking lots. And people did. There are those who would say, and I'm not an attorney, and I'm not a court of law, but there are those who would say that if the city were going to say that, they need to tell folks that some of the parking lots are in a floodplain, and they have to beware that if they park their car there when there is inclement weather and above average tides, it may be impacted. Is there a middle ground here, like offering those affected parties a settlement to not sue the city, to make this hurt go away, or are those people pretty much stuck with trying to battle it out with their insurance company or the city's insurance company or a little of each?
Right. It's a very, very difficult situation. I am heartbroken for the people who lost their cars, and for a lot of people, your car is the biggest investment that you'll make. From what I understand, the administration is doing everything it can to help people recover from their loss of property. I really don't think anyone intended for this to happen, of course, and something I recently learned is that it took just 9 minutes for that flood tide to come in. So the last thing anyone would have wanted is for residents to rush down to their cars and get trapped in a freezing flood tide, because then we wouldn't have been looking at a loss of property by itself, but also injury or even loss of life if that had happened. And that is a prospect that is just absolutely, it's very worrisome to me, to put it mildly. I feel for the people who lost their cars. I feel their frustration, and I know that the administration does too. It was a recommendation. It wasn't an order for people to park there, and I don't think anyone intended for this to happen. I am concerned that if the city paid a settlement for this particular incident, it would set a precedent for any other cataclysmic event to come after. So my takeaway is that we need to focus on coastal resilience, and we have been. I've spoken with Greg Catamertori, our planning director, and with Catherine Glenn, who is the regional coordinator for the Office of Coastal Zone Management here in Gloucester. The city has been doing intense work for several years regarding bolstering our coastal resilience against storm surges and climate change, and Catherine has actually generously offered to come to the Cape Ann Local Action Meeting at Gloucester UU Church this Sunday, February 4th at 3 p.m. for a roundtable discussion on Gloucester's efforts in the coastal resilience area, and so people can learn how to help if they want. And it will be over by the time the Super Bowl starts, so don't worry. But I'm confident that we will be able to move forward from this issue with a greater understanding of how to handle something like this in the future. And I know the city is also looking into alternate parking situations that aren't at the high school.
Good. Very well. As you go through, you're at a point now where they have sort of the changing of the guard, if you will, or the re-up of appointments. The charter calls for, and I forget the date, whether it's the 14th, the 13th, or the 1st of February, but it says that the term of office for certain department heads and all the boards and commissions that are on an annual or semi-annual or whatever appointment have to come due in February. What do you see that process involving, and how does that work in terms of the council interaction to review those appointments and confirm or deny the appointments?
Oh, sure. Well, our board, commission, and committee volunteers give so much of their time and energy and experience to help the city literally run. And Gloucester is one of those places in which we are very fortunate to have a huge talent pool spanning all sorts of demographics. By the same token, it's always important to encourage civic participation at every level and from everyone. And I encourage people to check out the city website, which is really a wealth of information on all sorts of topics. In the past, I've used social media to encourage people to check out vacancies on boards and commissions and committees and to see what piques their interest. And it's very important to have as much of a demographic balance as we can, and so that everyone's interests and viewpoints are represented. A lot of the people who serve on these particular boards, et cetera, have been serving for a number of years and are incredibly familiar with what goes on in Gloucester and have been doing an excellent job. So I appreciate everything that they do.
Well, you know, if you look at the people who have been elected mayor in Gloucester, going back even to the previous form of government, back when we had Plan E, the mayors have largely come from was 1, 4, and 5, the outer ring of the city. Only once has the city elected a mayor since 1971 that came from Ward 3, none from Ward 2. If you look at the people who are appointed to boards and commissions, it follows the same pattern. There's a preponderance of people appointed in Wards 1, 4, and 5, and a lot less in Wards 3 and 2. Is there any kind of strategy that people can, the administration or the city council can engage to try to balance out the participation in the center city wards that up until now have not been as involved as certainly some of the other wards?
That's a great question, and I honestly didn't know that was something that was an issue. I just look at board and commission and committee members as being people who live in the city, but I didn't necessarily think about where exactly in the city they live, just that they live somewhere in Gloucester. But
yeah.
I could certainly reach out to our Ward 2 and 3 representatives and see what their feelings are on the topic and if they have any talent that they would recommend or that they would encourage to apply. I would certainly be happy to do that.
Great. And the other issue, and I this isn't something you need to Gloucester. I raise it in other communities when I talk to city elected leaders, is how do you balance ages of people and how do you get new people involved so that it isn't the same people that serve on a committee for 20 years, and not that there's anything wrong with that, just that you have a sense that people serve until they can find a replacement or till somebody comes along that's interested. So I'm wondering how this stirs, and you're new to the equation, so I'm not putting it on you to have be the fountain of knowledge to tell us how it should work. I'm just wondering if, as you go forward, if that's something you guys might want to take a look at.
Sure. Well, I think it's great to involve young people in civic activities as much as possible. And, I mean, socioeconomic factors certainly play into that. I'm hearing and reading all sorts of things about millennials and how it's difficult to have a job, pay off student loans, and do things more recreationally or on a volunteer basis and still kind of keep afloat. So it's important to strengthen our economy in order for young people to be able to have hopefully stable jobs here and then maybe able to create a good work-life balance and work-volunteer hours somewhere into the equation, if that makes sense.
Well, it certainly does. And economics, I'm sure, plays a role in a large way into who gets appointed, because there are probably places where younger people live and they're working one or two jobs or raising a family and they don't have that time element. So it's not that anyone has set out to bias it in a particular way. It's just the way life goes, I guess. One of the things that's going to happen this year that hasn't happened in quite a while is there's going to be a student government day where students get elected to positions like city council at large and mayor and school board member, as well as get appointed police chief and fire chief and DPW director. And I know you and I talked when you were running for office, how excited you were about that. Share with us some of your thoughts about what your hopes and expectations are for the day and for that process going forward.
Well, I'm really happy that you asked about that, because if there's anything that will help young people really understand what sort of important role they can play in city government, it's to do something like that. That's fun. Student Government Day is one day. It isn't a big commitment for these kids who are oftentimes, you know, working or volunteering and, of course, busy with their studies and sports and what have you. But it's an amazing glimpse into how a city runs, and they get to make connections with the people that they shadow. I'm incredibly excited it's coming back. I'd be really happy to work with any Gloucester High School kid or any kid on just kind of learning about what makes the government run. And as a person who did participate in that as a freshman at Gloucester High School, it really made a huge impression on me in the subsequent years, and I'm sure it had a lot to do with why I'm a city councilor now.
Great. Well, we got just a minute or two left before we go to our next guest. I did want to say that I know that I've seen postings on Facebook by, I don't know if you had it, but certainly other councilors, about the app that's available for people to report work order related issues or projects that need to be addressed. The stop sign fell down, or somebody clipped a sign, or there's a huge pothole, or, you know, any number of things.
Yep.
Tell us about that and how you feel that's working. And the other part of it is, should city councilors be in, when John Q Citizen or Mary Q Citizen sends that data forward through their app, should the city councilors be copied on that somehow, so you know what's in the pipeline and what's being addressed? And should you get a report, say, periodically saying, this is what the citizenry has asked for, and this is what we've got, this is what the backlog is? Does any of that make sense?
That's a great question, Josh. And yes, the C-Click Fix app is fantastic. I used it now for, a year or two, and it's easy to download. It's free in the App Store, and it's also usable via the city website. And it allows citizens to upload a photo of any issues that might be going on. For example, I used it to report that a sign had gone missing from a telephone pole outside my house, and the information is sent to the DPW, and the DPW can sort of triage what issues are priorities and what issues can be maybe turfed to the following week or whatever.
Sure.
It's a wonderful app because it really streamlines the process for the DPW. It allows them to organize their priorities, and you can actually go in and see issues for the entire city if you want to.
Wow.
You can take a look and see what neighbors are discussing that might be issues cropping up. And I'm pretty sure that if you're a city councilor, you can take a look in the app itself and see if you can get emailed updates periodically. So it's very easy to use. It's sort of autonomous, and you can take a peek in there at any time and see what's going on. And that really makes it much less of a hassle for everyone, especially residents.
Great. Well, I want to thank you for taking time out of your busy day to share some of your thoughts with us. Certainly wish you the very best as you continue your journey as a city councilor at large and working to make the important decisions and be part of the legislative branch of local government.
Thank you so much, Josh. I'm proud to be a part of it, and I really appreciate you taking the time to interview me. Have a great time tomorrow.
All right. I'll see you. Weekend. Take care. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thanks.
Fabulous Fridays and Sunday brunch are back at the Gloucester House. World-renowned for its lobster dishes and fresh seafood specialties, the Gloucester House Restaurant, 63 Rogers Street, uses only locally caught, fresh North Atlantic seafood, offering traditional dining as well as catering to your private function needs. There is something for everyone and every occasion at the Gloucester House. Owned and operated by the Linquata family since 1959, they offer fabulous Friday lunch and dinner specials. And don't forget Sunday brunch from 10 to 2. For more information, go to GloucesterHouse.com.
Foster's Walter Wilkins Insurance Agency is teaming up with Columbia Insurance to deliver a full line of products, personal home and auto policies, as well as a full line of commercial coverage for business owners, including commercial property and commercial vehicle coverage. Wilkins partners with respected companies such as Plymouth Rock, Quincy Mutual, Commerce, and Safeco. For City of Gloucester employees, there are discounts on auto and home policies. Wilkins Insurance is located at 186 Main Street, Gloucester, now partnering with Columbia Insurance, serving the North Shore.
Our next guest is Susan Curry, who is a colleague of mine and a social media consultant. Susan, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me today, Josh.
Well, we usually start out and ask folks to give us a 2 or 3 minute bio, and then we could get into some questions about your work, your career, and work as a virtual assistant and a social media consultant.
Nice, thanks. Wanted to say hello to your audience today, and thank you for inviting me to speak today. I am happy to introduce myself. I am a lifelong Massachusetts North Shore resident, so I'm sure my accent will come through a nice way today. I have 30 years plus experience in marketing. I studied marketing at Northeastern University, and I began my career as a marketing assistant for an oil and gasoline wholesale company. Eventually found myself selling oil and gasoline futures contracts on the NYMEX, which was indeed a surprise twist in my journey as a younger person in a pretty competitive industry. And it sort of set the tone for how the rest of my career went. I really did not plan on becoming a virtual assistant as I am today, but it happened organically for me. And it's something that I feel that has enhanced my career because it was something that I didn't set out intentionally to do.
Sure.
It really was a decision that was made along the way. And so, you know, after a few years where I was doing marketing for the oil company, I took a slight pause to become a mom, and I was looking for something more part-time. So I took up with a financial advisor, and we were working out of Wakefield, Massachusetts at the time. And about 11 years ago, we decided to run this business with a full-functioning home office set up. So that is really where I started with the whole idea of working virtually, because I saw how well that the home office setup worked for us in the financial industry. And, you know, over time, that financial advisor decided that he was going to go in a different direction in his career. And I realized how successful we were able to run that business virtually from home, not seeing each other hardly ever. And I was able to service his clientele base very effectively. And it was clear to me at that time, Josh, that I should expand on this, which is exactly what I did. So just through word of mouth, with what I had built so far in my career and contacts and with that financial advisor who was always cheering me on, saying, you know, go Sue, and here's some of my connections and my colleagues who want to work with you. It literally just took off from there. So I was managing calendars and scheduling, and I was doing client service type work from home for them. And it was going along great. I had penned the sort of new title at the time, virtual assistant, and many people didn't quite know what to make of that. They all thought that it was very interesting, but couldn't really wrap their brain around how a virtual assistant could actually function the way that I did. And, you know, I just proved them wrong. And today, we all, I hope, are familiar with that term. You know, as time went on, I realized the depth of
social media and the depth of need for it in business. And it was just starting to explode about 7 years ago. I opened AdScoop, and the thing that I was looking for was, what are people looking for from me the most? What am I the most talented in? What is my passion? And I really wanted to focus my business. So instead of being all over the map and doing data entry and talking to customers on the phone and managing people's calendars and so forth, I wanted to focus my services. So I decided that I would put that focus on social media. And it was really a good idea in my case anyway, because it allows me to be creative. I'm not a very highly data-driven person. I'm more of a creative thinker. I'm very artistic in that I can take a look at your website, at your social media pages, and right away, everything jumps off the page at me very vividly. So many people tell me that that's where they're lacking, that in their business, they do what they do expertly, but they just have a very hard time with the digital media and the digital marketing, how it should look, feel, how it should, the user-friendliness part of it, where things should be, what buttons should be programmed, what platforms should be executed. And that's where I have quite a niche in, and that's how I feel creative. It's very artistic for me. So when I'm working with a client on a social media page or on a website, I feel as though it is a work of art. I try to customize it so that when you visit someone's Facebook business page that I've done, it looks like it was customized. And the only way to do that is to have the visual ability that I do. But also, you have to know your client. And when I find that clients that come to me who have worked with outsourcing their marketing media with larger marketing companies, they feel the absence of really having someone get to know who they are, what drives them and their business, what their goals are, what kind of a message they want to give to their audience, who their audience is. So in addition to my having a visual artistic ability to work on your digital marketing, I also combine that with fact-finding, with really searching out and getting to know who my clients are, so that their social media pages and their websites reflect a custom personalization, and it makes all the difference in the world to the audience that's looking at it.
You and I have chatted off the show about elected officials, and I'm guessing that businesses are the same way. Everyone has a belief that they need to be involved in social media, but when you call up people's pages, it's not really clear that they have a good handle on what's supposed to be on the page, or
exactly
how to update it, or there's a lot of things. You could find lots of flaws in what people present, and there are a myriad of reasons why that happens. I know that I've been doing some analysis through Arnold Gardner and Associates about the elective and political use and deployment of social media, and it's all over the place. You have some people who seem quite good at it in terms of what they post and how often they post, and then you have other people where I saw a site recently where a town committee was encouraging people to show up on Saturday such and such a day to get signatures for Scott Brown's reelection. You know, that's obviously outdated, and and that's a problem. In you know, I worked with I have worked in the past in public relations for Rotary District 7930, 48 clubs north of Boston, Massachusetts, and similar things. You know, people you go to a club's website, and the person who maintained that on a volunteer basis moved away and got a different job, and you know, no one's updated it in a year or two, and it gets stale. So how do you is that pretty much what some of the kinds of things that you encounter, whether it's a politician or a business?
Yes, it really doesn't matter what type of industry you're in. What you just said is across the board common. Some people think that all they do have to do is just create a Facebook page and they walk away from it. You know, as of the fourth quarter of 2017, Facebook had 2.2 billion monthly active users.
Wow.
So, you know, that number is nothing to sneeze at, especially from a marketing standpoint. It's the largest age group of users in that 2.2 billion is the 18 to 24 age bracket. However, what did I read? 30 million, I think, users are in that category. But they're still almost just as many. You know what it was? It was 52 million were in the age bracket of 18 to 24, excuse me. But 30 million users are between the ages of 35 and 54.
Yeah.
So you're covering the gamut of ages here, where everyone is on there using it. What you have to ask yourself, what your campaign page is doing to get on the newsfeed of all of these eyes on a daily basis. You know, and there's so much that you can do. There's video to engage your audience. There's, you know, you can stream live now. These are things that people must be taking advantage of. And if you're not, you're losing a huge audience. Just think about all the people watching YouTube all day, every day. This is what they want to see. They want to see images and video. That's one of my top tips for getting your visibility out there, is to take advantage of images and video, but also just posting every day on a daily basis, because these people are using it every single day, and you want to be in front of them.
Well, it seemed to me, too, when we're talking about any form of business, it's a great way to interface directly with your clients or your customers.
Sure.
If it's a political thing, it's the constituency. So if you only have 300 people that like your page and not that many people are accessing it, you're missing the boat, because you could be speaking to hundreds or thousands of people and letting them know what you have to offer. And the same thing with the product line. If you have if you're selling anything, you know, selling blankets, or you're selling clothing, or textiles, or whatever, a snow plowing service, the more people that you can reach out to let them know what you do and how well you do it and how easy it is to. And this seems to be just catching on, and more people are getting into it. So it's a budding industry.
Oh, sure. I mean, you can talk about your issues on Facebook, but, you know, if you don't even want to get in that deeply about it, there's ways that you can by displaying, if you're at an event or a business networking, you tag the people that are in the photo with you, and that goes on their pages. It's just a domino effect, and there's so many ways that you can take advantage of where you've been and what you're doing. It doesn't even have to be that you're speaking specifically about your stance on things. If you sometimes, you know, some of my clients come to me and they're a little bit shy about putting too much information out there, so that not to create a feeling of one way or another towards them yet in that political arena. So There's ways of to go about that, too, to do it in a very professional but personal way. And like I mentioned before, I think the word personal is key here, is just to make it so that people relate to you. It's certainly the best tool I've ever seen to as a reputation builder. It's a great way to build a reputation.
Now LinkedIn, just for a minute, is not like Facebook per se. Although as time marches on, I see they're incorporating more features that have been popular on Facebook. When I first got using it, I was working as a headhunter. I owned my own recruiting firm, and I used to tell client candidates that you want to have a LinkedIn account because it's a public display of your resume. It's an opportunity to showcase what your background is, and it is it's something that's continued to evolve, and people use it as it's a golden Rolodex. It sometimes. What is your take on its use, its functionality, and why it's important for people to sign up?
I think some people were turned off by LinkedIn at first because they encouraged the fact that you should only connect with people that you know personally. That was a big thing of theirs in the beginning, and they have changed that stance. There many people that I speak to, they don't realize that.
Yeah.
I've been on LinkedIn for 10 years, since 2008. There wasn't a single soul on LinkedIn that I knew at the time. Today, I have 1,000 connections, and I'm sure that I don't know them all personally. A handful of them, of course, but it's very open now to being able to connect with people who we maybe just have mutual connections with. And those mutual connections show up very easily, and it's just a great way to take advantage of meeting new people and talking to colleagues of yours that will help introduce you to people. It's a digital networking party, and you definitely should be at that party. I encourage my clients to review their Facebook page their LinkedIn page periodically. Also, don't leave that stagnant. Every time you make a small change, whether it's changing a date or wording in a description of a job that you held 10 years ago. Every time you make a small change and hit that save button on LinkedIn, that goes out in the newsfeed and it says, Josh Arnold updated his background section. And there you are. You just popped up in front of someone. And it just is a great opportunity to take advantage of getting in front of people without even looking like you were trying. So I like that about Facebook is that you don't have, about LinkedIn, you don't have to make a post. You can post things, and you should. But what I'm trying to say is even with their platform functionings where you're changing information about yourself, that goes out, and it's a great way to get seen. So I recommend that everyone go on their if you ask yourself, when was the last time I logged into my LinkedIn page? Josh, you're doing it, obviously, and I'm doing it, but most people don't use it.
Yeah.
And that's really a shame.
It's a gold mine. If you use it right, it's a gold mine for your business. And I found that I like the feature where if I clicked on Susan Curry, it's going to tell me, even before we've connected, it's going to tell me how many people we have in common that we're linked to. And what I find because of that feature is the bigger your network is, the more people want to become a part of it and network with you. So I get invitations every day from a range of people. I don't know them all personally. In fact, a lot of them I don't know and probably won't know. But I'll accept them if it look legitimate and it's not someone spoofing. the larger your network grows, the more people that are attracted to it, because maybe they want to be able to network with someone that's in your network that they can't get to on their own.
You're right on there, Josh. And let's talk about advertising that's available on LinkedIn and on Facebook.
Yeah.
You know, there you go with – you're able to, I don't know if people realize it, but you're able to target specific audiences on both Facebook and LinkedIn, and you can go into age and gender and by mileage, how many zip codes you want to cover, their interests and hobbies, really dial it down and set a budget for your advertising that it will not exceed. So as soon as you hit that budget, it shuts off automatically. The ability to advertise on these two networks is something that I've found to be very successful for any of my clients that have used it. And you really should look into that if you're interested in paid advertising. It's well worth it.
Great. Well, I want to thank you for taking time out of your busy day to be a guest on Trending Now with Josh Arnold, and wish you the very best, and I'll be in touch with you on some other business matters in the very near future.
Thanks, Josh. Happy Friday.
Happy Saturday to you. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Get the skills you need to be a leader in sports and recreation. A master's in athletic administration from Endicott's Van Loan School prepares students for careers in schools, government agencies, nonprofit organizations, sports governing bodies, private sports clubs, and more. Van Loan's athletic administration master's program is 100% online with affordable tuition. Try a class before fully enrolling. Visit vanloan.endicott.edu/athleticadmin today.
People, come in, take a seat. You're really in for a treat at Sylvan Street. A great place to eat and drink and meet with family and friends at Sylvan Street. Treat you right, day or night. Satisfy your appetite. Eat, drink, and chill at the Sylvan Street Grill.
Catch a game with friends, meet for lunch, cocktails after work, or a romantic dinner for two. Whatever your plan to do it at Sylvan Street Grill in Peabody and Salisbury. See you at Sylvan Street.
Eat, drink, and chill at the Sylvan Street Grill.
Hi folks, this is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. If you're thinking of replacing the windows in your home, you should look at the Anderson Woodwright Double Hung Insert Window, which comes with rich wood interiors in oak, pine, or maple. Quite simply, Anderson is the most trusted window in America. That's why we've been selling them for 57 years. Please see the Anderson Woodwright windows on display at any of our three locations in North Reading, Beverly, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
Welcome back to Trending Now with Josh Arnold. Our next guest is Kim Spanner, a Rotarian in Gloucester, who is the chairwoman of the Polar Plunge Committee. Kim, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Well, we have some questions to ask. tell us about how Rotary International got involved with polio in the first place.
Well, when they got involved was around 1970, was in 1979 when they had a project in the Philippines.
Okay, and that went pretty well, and so that led them to become involved in a much broader way. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, that's when they decided they wanted to eradicate it in every country, and so that they opened it up, Rotary opened it up to be a part of eradication of polio throughout all the countries. And it became their signature cause.
Okay.
Go ahead.
The effort to eradicate polio is being led by Rotary International, and they've partnered with some other entities. Who are some of the people they've partnered with?
Yeah, Rotary International has partnered with the World Health Organization and the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. And the Gates have contributed over $1 billion, including
providing matching funds for some events like our Rotary's Polar Plunge that's taking place tomorrow at 11 at the Cape Ann Motor Inn on Long Beach.
Super. Now, the efforts, what can you share with us about what's become the ongoing success story sustained by the Rotary polio efforts?
Well, from 1979 through going throughout the country, it's about 99.9% of polio is eradicated. And we've helped to immunize about 2.5 billion children in 122 countries.
Wow. Wow, that's impressive.
Yeah.
What does it involve to help immunize a child today from this dreaded disease, polio?
Well, the good news is it doesn't take much to help to immune a child and eradicate it. It's less than a dollar per child. It's around 60 cents. It's really not, for a small donation, we can do a lot, and that's why I'm so proud of what we've done so far.
So how did the Polar Plunge come into being as far as Gloucester is concerned?
Well, this is our eighth year, and it began with one of our previous Rotary presidents, Steve Cady, attending a district meeting. And during that meeting, the idea was born, and he brought it back to our current Rotary president, which was you, Josh Arnold. And Steve suggested that Josh find sponsors and jump in the ocean in January, February. And you, Josh, brought it to the board, and we decided to become a host site for Rotary in 2011. The site is at our Cape Ann Motor Inn, where plungers can rent rooms at a modest rate for a couple hours that day so they can prepare to jump and take hot showers afterwards. We also have provided coffee and hot chocolate and pastries during that event, so it's gotten quite large.
What was that first year? What was that like, if you can share with us?
The first year, there was about 35 plungers representing several Rotary clubs, including you, our president at that time, and we raised about $27,000. And the water was pretty balmy at 42 degrees. However, it was 36 degrees outside. I think tomorrow is going to be 2 degrees, so it's going to be interesting.
Yeah, I remember waiting. I remember being in the water, and I was walking. I was one of the first ones in, but I was walking backwards, and, you know, I get out, you know, as far as anybody, and I'm only up to my waist, and I'm realizing I probably could have made it to the island without going underwater, but then I realized, well, I'm going to duck and get the hell out of there. But it worked, and it became a fun event, and that's built on that. I know when we first did it, we were talking about, well, it was a one-time thing. Nobody really gave that much thought to it becoming an annual event, but it has become one. Tell us about how it's how that's processed.
First year we raised 27, and the second year we raised 52, and the third year we raised 82, and it's grown since then to over 100, and then we have the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation doing a 2-to-1 match. So we've raised, on our eighth year, we're up to $1 million district wide. So it's pretty. We're pretty proud of it.
Great.
We have right now, as we said, there were 35 plungers in year one. Well, there's over 100 plungers now, and lots of spectators come for the event because it's a pretty big spectacle. We have wonderful music of We Are the World and just patriotic things that are sung during that time, and some of them kind of take it as the winter beach party of the year. So there's a lot of people there that day.
Great.
And tomorrow's our day, so everyone should come.
So give us the who, what, where, and when for as far as the event is tomorrow.
Okay, so tomorrow is our eighth annual event on Long Beach. It's adjacent from the Cape Ann Motor Inn. And because there's limited parking, we do ask that anyone who comes, if they could park at Good Harbor Beach. We have several shuttles starting at 9:30, taking people to and from. There's not a lot of waiting around. We have lots of shuttles. So we're kicking it off, picking up at 9:30 and plunging. The kickoff starts at 11 o'clock. And everybody should be running into the water by between 11 and 11:15. And this year, our Rotary officials who are attending is our District Governor David Gardner, our District Governor-elect Bob Wood, our District Governor nominees Joan Arsenault and Betsy Manzilli, and our elected officials who will be coming is our Mass State Senator and Minority Leader Bruce Tarr, and our Gloucester Mayor Safathia Romeo Taken, and City Council President Paul Lundberg. So it's going to be sunny but very, very cold.
And are you going to be plunging, or are you going to be working the event?
I'm going to be making sure people don't clog the entryway with their cars so that it's a smooth transition. So I do encourage the shuttles.
Great, great. Okay. Well, I want to thank you for taking time out of your busy day with Bank Gloucester and joining us to share this important civic and world philanthropical event, and wish you the very best with the Polar Plunge tomorrow at Long Beach.
Thank you, and I hope to see you there, Josh.
I will be the guy that looks like a polar bear.
Awesome. Take care.
Take care.
Thanks. Bye.
All right, that takes care of that hour.
Yeah.
My goodness. So you'll be warm tomorrow.
Yeah, it's a warm suit. I mean, you gotta still have to dress warm, but you know, it's better to wear that thing when you're outside when it's cold than to wear it inside anywhere because you sweat profusely. It's tough to wear that like a 4th of July parade. You got to have plenty of beverages, but yeah.
Okay. All right. So good luck tomorrow, and we will be back next Friday. What do you have lined up?
Beth Gerard, who is going to be on this week, will be a guest, and we're in the process of confirming the other guests for that show.
Okay, very good. And then the following week, we will be off due to vacation, school vacation, and so on. All right, this has been Trending Now with Josh Arnold. Our producer and engineer is Bill Proposky. I'm Rick Moore. Don't forget lots and lots of sports updates and news updates right here on MSO News Sports all weekend long. Bye-bye.